The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back on The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Brett Saberhagen. He's a two-time American League Cy Young Award winner. He also was the World Series MVP for the Royals in 1985. He will be on to celebrate the start of baseball season. Really happy to catch up with him. Rob, let's talk a little bit of baseball before we get back to talking a little bit of basketball. I don't want anybody, I think, to come into today down about the Royals. I think that there are really two ways of looking at what happened yesterday. If you want to look at it glass half empty, I mean, they lost. You certainly can look at it through that lens if you want to, or I think you can look at it through a glass half full mentality, which one baseball game in March, I don't really know why you would choose to look at it any differently than that. Yes, the Royals made too many mistakes yesterday to win the game. I don't think it was an issue of, I think it just, baseball happened yesterday. And against a team that is a good team in the Cleveland Guardians, a team that last year won this American League Central, you just can't give them the amount of opportunities that the Royals did yesterday. You can't give them three or four extra bases over the span of a 9-10 inning game. You can't run into outs with his runners on first and third with no outs. You can't be in that situation and expect to win that kind of game. But we led the show with this. If you want to look at yesterday half glass half full, I don't think it's that hard to do it. If you look at, I believe it was the fourth inning. Maybe I got my inning off just a little bit. I mean, they scored that because of their young talent. There are not many players in baseball that I think are safe on that Bobby Witt Jr. infield hit. It was not bobbled. That was a fast player, put the ball in play, hustled, beat it out, and got on first base. And in order to start a rally, in order to score multiple runs, that's usually what it requires. Bobby Witt Jr. is on base. Vinny Pasquantino was coming up, and that's his role on this team. Hey, if Jonathan India is doing what he's supposed to do, if Bobby Witt Jr. is moving base runners, all right, now you got a couple of guys on base for Vinny, and Vinny's responsibility is to drive in runs. He drove in runs yesterday. So if you want to look at it from the glass half full perspective, I don't think you have to look that hard to do it yesterday. They went 8-5 against the Cleveland Guardians. Like, they're going to have these kind of up and down games, I think it goes. You still got a chance to win this series. You still got a chance to, obviously, move on with the season. So I don't really think, Rob, that there's much of a reason to come in today too negative. Sure, you go out there, you want to see them win. It's opening day. It was beautiful outside. They have a 3-0 lead heading into the fifth inning. Yes, that's a game that the Royals should have won. I don't think there's any reason to feel very down on the Royals coming into today.
I understand why fans feel down about the individual game, but you said at the outset, there's an old saying in baseball, you're going to win 50, you're going to lose 50, and it's what you do with the other 62 that matters. I think if you're a Royals fan, it's fair to be a little bit frustrated because yesterday was probably one of the other 62. It felt like, hey, you weren't outgunned on the starting pitching, you didn't, you know, just have people hammering home runs. It felt like one of those 62-game middle ground toss-ups, and it felt like one you could have had, but you didn't get it. So I understand being frustrated with the game, but with the team, this is just what happens in sports. It is, opening day is great for a multitude of reasons. Opening day also kind of stinks because we treat that one baseball game like a football game. It's played at 3 o'clock, the whole city stops, everyone's fired up, and they have an off day the next day. That's not really how baseball is played. If that game was played on May 17th, I don't even know what day of the week that is. And it was a Wednesday night, and the Royals lost that game. The next day, they'd be playing a day game, and we'd be frustrated and all those things, but you have the next day to kind of wash away the stink of the loss and get back in the win column, all the things about baseball. I think opening day is great, but one of the reasons it kind of stinks is because there's an off day the next day, we treat it like a football game, and we hyper-analyze and over-break down and jump to massive conclusions from a singular game. Yesterday was one of those 62 middle ones. You'd like to win it. You didn't. It seems like life happens. You're on to the next. Seth Lugo's a good pitcher. You feel like tomorrow he can go out, stop the bleeding per se, and then Sunday they can win a series, and by the time me and you are back on the air on Monday, we could be talking about, look, they beat last year's division-winning team to start the season. It just, one game is not how baseball works. It's a sample size sport.
Yeah, and I think at least when it comes to the Royals, and we can maybe talk about this later and expand on it a little bit more, the Royals are always fighting that perception in the first 10 to 14 games of the season, more so than any of the local teams that we discuss, more so than any of those teams. The Royals have to get off to a great start. Have to. Chiefs lose their first game. Oh, everybody's overreacting. Oh, it's just 1% of the baseball season. And it's perfectly fine. No one's saying you should overreact if the Chiefs lose their season opening game or so, because you got 15, 16 more Sundays to make it right. That ain't how we treat the Royals. That is not how people discuss the Royals. That is just not how it goes. So I think that plays a major part in the conversation of all of those things. Let's switch gears. Let's talk a little bit of basketball. Brett Saberhagen is going to call into the show in about 10 minutes or so. All right, let's talk some basketball. Now, I do not believe that this is a hindsight's 2020 or armchair quarterback perspective. For those of you that have been listening to the show, you know that this is the side that I've been on. I am always going to be on the side of coach your team, especially in college basketball. Always. Because you know what? I watch enough NBA basketball. I watch enough high school basketball. I watch enough college basketball to know that at the lower levels, your players are not good enough for you to leave them to their own devices and 100% trust them to make the right decision. You know what young players normally do? They get rattled in certain scenarios. They don't have the game experience or sometimes the ability to create their own shot and get to the basket. But you know who has the ability? The coach that is in the Hall of Fame usually has that ability. So call timeout. Call timeout. Calm everybody down and devise a plan of what you're going to do. And I'm watching the end of the Arkansas-Texas Tech game, and it was a great back and forth, lived up to the hype. Texas Tech was one of the best teams in the country. Arkansas has as much talent as everybody else. But at the end of the game, it came down to one team was able to execute its offensive plan through coaching. The other team wasn't. Texas Tech ran the exact same play and set the final three possessions of the game. We have this player. He is our best player. We don't think you can guard him. We're going to tell him to go to this side of the floor on this block, and we're going to trust you to be able to make a move. Everybody else move out of the way, crash the board if necessary. That is how we are going to handle our in-game situations. They also had enough time where they could do exactly what they wanted to do. All right, the kid makes a tough shot. You are now down two. Arkansas has the ball with 7.2 seconds left and one timeout. You're going to let your entire season be dictated by DJ Wagner? No one else on the play touched the basketball. He was 5 of 14 from the floor at that point. Wait, we're not going to let anybody else touch the ball. We're not going to set a screen for him. We're not going to call timeout. We're just going to let DJ Wagner decide if our season continues or not. How does that sound like a good plan? John Calipari was asked after the game about the decision to not call a timeout. This is what he said.
Consideration to calling a timeout there?
Yeah, but in my career, I let that go. Let the guy get to the rim. They're not going to foul you. You know, and with that kind of time, just me. You call a timeout, now you got to worry about what he's doing, how he's playing, the inbound, what are you doing? So I usually let that go. Now, because it ended the way it is, yeah, I wish I would have called a timeout. But 99% of the time, I let that go. because now I know what they're doing. They know what we're doing. That's why we did it. End of the half, we wanted to go at one guy, and we did. Really, he made a hard bump on DJ that got him kind of off balance on the shot. But, you know, it was what we wanted.
I don't understand the logic at all. Let's start with number one. John Calipari says, in the past, we've let that go. Okay, well, let's think about some of the guards you've had in the past. You had Derrick Rose, who 2 years later, after leaving Memphis, won NBA MVP. You had him. You had John Wall, who is one of the best point guard prospects in high school basketball in the last 20 years at the end of the game. So, yeah, sometimes Devin Booker is the one that's making that play. And maybe you trust him. I would still call a timeout, but maybe you trust those guys in that scenario. That's not who DJ Wagner is. You want to know how I know? Because he was the number one high school recruit, and this is the end of his second year, and he's coming back to school. That's how I know he's not on the same caliber of those first couple of guys that I mentioned. And what I heard from John Calipari there is, well, if I coach my team, then the other guy gets to coach his team. What? Why does that matter? I don't care about that. You coach your team and your ability. So what I'm doing in that scenario is I'm having my player sprint to me on the sideline and call timeout. We get the ball out of bounds on our side of the floor with, what, 5.1, 4.8 seconds to go, somewhere in that range. That's more than enough time for you to be able to get the shot that you want that will determine if your season will move on or not. But no, instead, your season ended because you choose to let DJ Wagner go one-on-one like this is the N1 mixtape and we're at the Rucker Park. No! What makes you think that's in his bag? I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. What is the purpose of having all these timeouts if coaches are taking timeouts with them to the offseason? This isn't your rollover minutes. This isn't singular wireless where you can just roll your minutes over from month to month. That's not how this works. You get a finite amount of times to stop play, calm your team down, and communicate and execute the play that you want. Why you would ever let a 19-year-old determine your season independently of anybody else. No one else touched the basketball. It was inbounded to DJ Wagner, and he made every decision the rest of the way about how your season was going to end. I don't know how you can hear that and think that that is the right thing to do for the group, for the collective. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Brett Saberhagen. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Hey, I want to tell you guys something cool that is happening. Our friends over at Brew Brothers at Harris, Kansas City, they're partnering with Save Wings. Save Wings is the charity of Brett Saberhagen. It is dedicated to providing financial support for everyday living expenses to patients that help fight cancer. If you go to Brew Brothers, they have two special menu items where a part of the proceeds go directly to Save Wings. You can get the double American Wagyu bacon burger. You also can get the baseball cut 10 ounces American Wagyu sirloin steak. So if you go down to Brew Brothers at Harris, Kansas City, you can enjoy some great food, grab yourself a cold drink, and you can also support a wonderful cause. And be sure to tell them that The Drive sent you there. We certainly want to help out in any way that we can to the charity of Brett Saberhagen. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by one of the greatest pitchers in Royals history. Brett Saberhagen joins us on the show. Brett, really appreciate your time. Really great work that you guys are doing. Tell us how your charity got started.
Well, my wife and I kind of co-founded Saves Wings. I had a nonprofit that wasn't doing a whole lot since 2008, where the economy kind of went south. She's a three-time diagnosed with breast cancer, and that's kind of where it all stemmed from. We were spending about $22,000 a month on her last diagnosis. with experimental drugs that weren't covered. So when we got done with that, we decided, we talked about it and changed the mission to helping families going through cancer. And it doesn't matter what type of cancer it is, doesn't matter how old you are or young. If you are skipping treatments, if you can't afford your mortgage, if you can't afford your car payment, and you're mortgaging your house because you're trying to keep a loved one alive, that's where Saves Wings kind of was all thought up and founded by Candace and myself. And so far, we've helped families in 20 different states. We've been doing a lot with KU Med, their oncology staff, and that, and helping a lot of people in Kansas City. And it's been a great couple years. We've only been, this will be our fifth year of really kind of kicking Saves Wings into gear. And it's been very gratifying. I feel like I was put on this planet not just to pitch baseball, but use that platform to help all these families that we're helping.
I do want to get back to your charity here in a bit. Let's kind of go back and forth and talk some baseball as well. You are someone who has started opening day before. What is it like? Take us through the emotion of what it's like to start that first game of the season.
Well, you always want to get your first at-bat, your first inning pitched. You don't want it to linger for a few days. I never really had a whole lot of success on opening day, but it was always a great thrill to be representing the team and going out there and getting that nod for opening day. It's a great honor bestowed on whoever that opening day starter is. It means that you've done some good work and you've had some success. So it's always great. It seems like a national holiday. People, kids, and fans just come out to support their team and get the boys of summer going in the right direction. Hopefully.
Now, right now, we're talking to Brett Saberhagen, just getting his thoughts on the Royals, getting his thoughts on baseball. I'm excited to ask you this question. As someone who, you started your career in 84 and you went to the late 90s and early 2000s, how did you see the game change in your career? How have you seen it change in the 25 years since you've been out of baseball?
Well, it really hasn't changed a whole lot while I was playing the 18 years that I was in the big leagues. It has changed since I've left the game. Analytics has been a big part of the game. And I'm not a huge analytics fan. I feel like there's a place in the game for it, but I don't think there's enough managing and coaching with the eyes as much as it should be. That's what managers did back when we were playing. Again, I think there's a place for analytics, but if analytics was 100% right 100% of the time, I would say, that's what you should be doing all the time. But a lot of times, the managers need to go with their gut and their eyes to see, whether they should leave a guy in or take a guy out or, move them over or so on and so forth. But the analytics has really made a difference in the game and the videos. And so that's a huge part of it. I know guys are coming back and just watching video after video of their previous at-bats. And we did some of that, but it was more of VHS tapes. It wasn't, the iPads and the dugout or in the runway that they have going on now. And it's tough for a lot of older players, such as I'll give you a for instance, Chili Davis is a dear friend of mine, and him working with the hitters and when he was with the Cubs, Oakland, the Mets, the Red Sox, it's tough to relate to some of those guys, and he did a great job of it, don't get me wrong, but the way they think are a little bit, nowadays the players think a little differently than what we did, the old-timers. I'm going to throw myself in the old-timer category.
Right now we're talking to Brett Saberhagen, just talking about his career a little bit, getting you ready for baseball. It is back around the country. You are actually the first person that I have ever talked to that has thrown a no-hitter in a game. I've got a chance to talk to Tom Glavine. I've got a chance to talk to John Smoltz. Neither one of those individuals have pitched a no-hitter. You have. Take us back to August 26th of 1991, and in the course of that, when do you know that your stuff is on and that this is possible?
Two great Hall of Famers, and I see them out on the golf course periodically. I'll have to mention that next time they rib me about something else. So Thanks for sharing that. But, it was I've come close to a no-hitter in a perfect game in the past prior to August 26, I believe, in 91. Brent Maine was my catcher. It was against the White Sox. By the time I got to the seventh inning, and that's kind of where I kind of did some visualizing, is like in the past, I always was thinking about outs. So you get to the seventh inning, it's like, okay, I need so many outs left to get, six more outs and five more outs. And instead of focusing on how many outs I needed to get, I was focused to pitch in that particular day in that no-hitter. So it really helped with me kind of strategizing, not really focused on just trying to get an out, rather than focused on the hitter and how to set him up if I fell behind or as a head in the count, what I wanted to do, my strengths, their weaknesses.
Who is the best former baseball player turned golfer?
Well, Smoltz's right up there, that's for sure. But Mark Mulder, I'd put Mulder up there against just about anybody. The majority of them are pitchers. Derek Lowe's another one of those really good golfers. Great athlete as well. Smoltz, and I know Smoltz tried to play on a tour event one time, didn't make the cut, but that's a different ball game. I think a lot of times we feel like we can compete with the pros in a different sport, but realistically, there's no chance.
One thing I noticed when you go back and you watch highlights from your era, and I understand it's differently. Guys make more money than they ever had before. Guys change teams more frequently than you guys did back in the day. There seemed to be a genuine dislike and disgust for other teams. Like, you guys hated the New York Yankees. You hated certain teams. I don't really get that feel in today's game that Team A really doesn't like Team B.
Yeah, no. It's definitely some of the rivalries are still there, but the hatred towards certain teams, such as the Yankees and Red Sox, it seems a little more calm and relaxed. You don't have Don Zimmer coming after Pedro Martinez and Pedro throwing him to the ground, and Veritek and A-Rod getting into a scuffle. it was one of those rivalries that. You strap it on, and you never know what you were going to get in a game. So, it's probably not as strong, but it's still there, and especially with the fans. The fans will definitely let you know. Whether the players might feel it or not, the fans definitely do.
Right now, we're talking to Brett Saberhagen. He is joining us courtesy of his charity, Sabes Wings. Just talking a little baseball here. You mentioned the best pitcher that you have been around in Pedro Martinez. He's the best pitcher that I've ever seen in person. You could just tell that he was different. You could tell that he was special. Let's go to the other side. Who's the best hitter that you face? Who's that guy that you would put in that category the way you discuss Pedro Martinez?
Well, definitely being around George Brett, seeing him day in and day out, you would probably take him for granted, but definitely a guy if you needed a clutch hit to kind of pick up the team. He led by example, amazing to be around. But a guy that really wore me out that I played against was Wade Boggs. He hit about 450, I believe, off of me, but I did get him out 33 times, so...
You mentioned you're a golfer. What's your favorite course that you've played at? Is there still a course that's on your bucket list that you haven't made it to yet?
Well, Augusta's coming up. The Masters have not played there. I haven't been on the grounds, actually, but that would be that's number one. If anybody's listening out there that wants to be able to take me to play Augusta, I'd be up for that. I've played some amazing courses. I love Scotland. One of the newer courses, the old course, if it didn't have the history, and I'll tell you a quick little funny story. King's Barn is probably my favorite course over there. Carnoustie is a very tough course, but we were playing King's Barn. One of the trips that we went over there, it was one of the first trips before we played the old course ever. And the caddy asked what course you guys plan on playing tomorrow, and he said we're on the the ballot for the old course. We hope to get on that. And he, the caddy, says, it's a goat track. And didn't really understand it until seeing it. And if it didn't have the history, it's not... it wouldn't be as special, I should say that. It's a fun course to play. It's scoreable. The caddies come into play quite a bit, but the old course would be up there. Kings Barnes would be up there. Pebble Beach definitely would be up there. I've been fortunate to play some fun courses. There's a plenty of courses around the United States that that I would love to play at some point in time before I can only hit the ball 100 yards.
I got a couple of pitching questions, and we'll get you out of here. We're talking to Brett Saberhagen. The first one, when you watch baseball today, is there a pitcher that reminds you of you?
Ooh. That's a good question. I'm going to have to think about this one, and I'll have to get back to you on that. I love watching guys that that's similar to me. I don't know, but I love the guys that are the bulldogs that want the ball, that go along in the game, and the manager lets them go more than three times around in the order. If we can get them to throw a few more innings and compete a little bit more, a few more shutouts, a few more complete games throughout the year, those are the pitchers that that I enjoy watching, that really take pride in what they start and trying to finish off the game. But there's some amazing pitchers in and around the game that I really love to watch.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Maybe not there's a player that reminds you of you, but are there a couple of guys that you try to make it a point, hey, I want to see when this guy starts, I want to make sure. Are there those guys in Major League Baseball that really gravitated towards?
You know what? I like good baseball now. So if there's a good matchup that is going on, then I definitely want to tune into that. But I wouldn't say there's a certain pitcher that I'm gonna check out if he's pitching. I'm still a huge baseball fan. I still have a lot of former teammates and friends that I played against that are coaching. So Bud Black, who was my mentor with the Royals while I was there, is still with the Rockies, and it's nice to see the Rockies get some players for him. It seems like every time he goes to manage somewhere, whether it's Padres or the Rockies, he's got a few players and they trade him away. It's fun to watch. And again, I was a Cub fan growing up, so my first big league game I ever went to was at Wrigley Field with my grandfather, who actually got me involved in baseball. And I pull for multiple teams. All the teams that I've played for, of course, they're for those teams. But then I, the friends that are coaching and around the major league, still, I still pull for them.
Last thing here, I mean, you are one of the few people who have ever won the Cy Young Award multiple times. I mean, you are one of the greatest pitchers in league history. I'm sure at some point there is a young pitcher, whether it's a high school kid, whether it's a college kid, maybe it's a major leaguer, that comes up to you and asks you advice. What's the number one piece of advice that you give? What advice do you give people who want to turn out to have the career that you had?
Command over velocity. First pitch strikes. That's pretty simple. If you can do that, if you go strike one, you can throw any pitch in your arsenal on the second pitch. You go ball one, it kind of lowers what you want to do, and if you definitely fall behind past ball one, then the pitches that you want to throw, again, sometimes you don't want them on the plate, and you can't throw that ball. You need to throw that strike. I hate walks, so command over velocity for me. And that's what everybody loves. It's like, okay, the spin rotation, the velocity that they're throwing. There's a lot of guys that throw around 90 miles an hour that make a lot of money in Major League Baseball. So
that is Brett Saberhagen joining us on the show today. He is a two-time Cy Young Award winner. He is a World Series MVP. He is a World Series champion. He is coming to the show courtesy of Saves Wing, his charity that is dedicated to providing financial support for everyday living expenses to patients who are fighting cancer. Brett, it is a tremendous charity. It is great work that you guys are doing, and we're happy to support and spread the message however we can. We really appreciate your time today. Thanks for popping on.
Well, we really appreciate you having us on, and if you get a chance, go on into Harrah's, check out the meals that they have that they're giving back to Saves Wings as well. They got a steak and a burger and a brew that you could purchase, and the percentage of each one that is sold goes back to Saves Wings. So go on into Harrah's and check it out, and maybe play your luck a little bit there.
Absolutely. That's Brett Saberhagen joining us on the show today. Brett, really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot for popping on today.
All right. Thank you.
Really happy to be joined by Brett Saberhagen. Be sure to stop by Brew Brothers at Harrah's, Kansas City. They are partnering with Saves Wings. It is his charity dedicated to providing financial support for everyday living expenses to patients who are fighting cancer. You can go get the double American Wagyu bacon burger. You also can get the baseball cut 10-ounce American Wagyu sirloin steak. You get either one of those things, and part of the proceeds go directly to Saves Wings to help for their cause. Always happy to help. Shout out to Brett Saberhagen for calling in today. Really happy to have him join us on the show. We'll get back to baseball here coming up in just a bit. We're going to have Josh Vernier call into the show coming up at the top of the hour. We'll talk baseball before then, but at least want to let you guys know that Vern is certainly right around the corner. So we are past the combine part of the NFL draft process, and we are now at Pro Day. So around the country, you know, Missouri has one, Miami has one, Arizona State, you know, all of the big schools, all the power schools have their Pro Day. Well, yesterday, Cam Scataboo had his Pro Day. He ran a 4.640, and everybody is up in arms about it. Let me give you a couple of players who also ran a 4.640 who have turned out to be very productive running backs in the National Football League. James Conner ran a 4.65. Ramondre Stevenson ran a 4.64. David Montgomery, who is probably, what, one of the top 10, 15 running backs in the National Football League, he ran a 4.63. Cam Scataboo ran a 4.65 at 220 pounds. I already know what's about to happen with the National Football League because I see it. This happens all the time. We are about to deny ourselves what we saw on the field, and now we are going to go to the T-shirt Olympics to determine how good of a football player you are. We're now going to go through how much you can bench press and what your shuttle cone drill is and how fast you run the 40, and we are going to disregard that we just saw you take Arizona State to the college football playoff. Don't overthink this with Cam Scataboo. Please don't. I saw what he did at a power four level. I then saw what he did up against maybe the best team in the SEC last year in the Texas Longhorns. Why are we doing this? I'm now seeing it. Oh, that's got to push him down the board. He's now going to be a fourth or fifth round pick. All right. You guys can make that mistake if you want to. I saw that kid play in college, and I can tell you that I know that kid can play. That, yes, maybe he's not going to be a 4.3, 4.4. That ain't the kind of running back that he was. I saw the player last year have 293 carries for 1,700 yards, 21 touchdowns, and average 5.8 yards per carry. I saw that same receiver show you an ability to catch it out of the backfield and have 600 yards receiving. I then saw, if you were questioning, well, who are you doing it against in the Big 12? I want to see you do it against a big dog. Well, I saw you. I saw you against Texas. 30 carries, 143 yards. Oh, yeah, you had 8 catches for 99 yards in that game as well, and you scored 2 touchdowns. Don't overthink this. Please don't overthink this. He is one of the best running back prospects that is on the board. I'm not penalizing Cam Scataboo because he ain't Chris Johnson from back in the day. I don't care what his 40 time is. Can you play or can you not play? And I saw a running back that can play. I think he is an ideal fit in the league. A willing blocker, a guy who can hit home runs. We saw that in college. A guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. A guy who has shown that he's going to be durable as well. I don't know what else you need. I've seen everything I need to see from Cam Scataboo to know that he is very high on my list of running backs that I would want on my team for the upcoming season. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Josh Vernier and get you ready for game 2 of the Royal season. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Cole Reagans from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with C-Dot on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Entry Law.
Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, let's talk a little bit of baseball, a little bit of basketball here before we catch up with Josh Vernier. Let's start with the baseball thing first. I thought the coolest thing about yesterday's game was the first pitch. Now, I hope that they showed this on television. I was at the game, so I don't know if they showed this or not. But they had two people throw out the first pitch. They had Willie Wilson, who was on the 1985 team, throw out the first pitch. They also had Lorenzo Cain throw out the first pitch, who was on the 2015 team. So this year, the Royals are highlighting and celebrating the anniversary of both championships, which they should. That is a major part of your history. If you are my age and you heard the stories of what the Royals accomplished in 85 and you never thought that you would see that, guess what? We eventually got to see it, that we have our Willie Wilson. We have our George Brett. We have our Brett Saberhagen. We have our heroes from the 2015 team. I hope that the Royals continue throughout the course of this season to blend those two celebrations together for more moments like yesterday. I want to see them continue to do that all season. It was cool to see. It was really cool to see. Now, I do have one small complaint about it. I guess I get why he didn't do it. It would have been really cool for Salvi to come out and catch the first pitch from Lorenzo Cain. But, you know, it's a small complaint of what I have about what happened yesterday. But the pageantry of yesterday, it's what you thought it was going to be. It was opening day. It was a flyover. There was a massive flag. It was God Bless America. It was a major baseball game. But what I think the Royals do, as well as just about anybody in Major League Baseball, it is pay respects to what they have accomplished in the past and continuing to bring those guys around. This season should be a year-long celebration of winning the World Series in 2015. It is still a cloud over the city. So the more times that you can have Eric Hosmer come back and Mike Moustakas come back and Lorenzo Cain and Alex Gordon, who's going into the Royals Hall of Fame this year, the more days that you can celebrate what you guys did a decade ago, the better, I think. That makes people want to go out there to the ballpark. I'm here for it. I thought that was a really cool thing about yesterday's game. Rob, I have an idea. Now tell me if I'm off or you've maybe even read this before. Have you ever read a story about what people do with the money that they win from the 50-50 raffle? I would like to read this story. Yesterday, the raffle got up to a pretty big pot. You know, it was a sellout crowd yesterday. 39,000 people, the largest opening day crowd they've had since 2017. For those of you that went to the postseason games back in 14 and 15, you know some of those 50-50 raffle pots got heavy. It's a substantial win if you win the 50-50 rally. What I would love is I would love to go on the Kansas City Stars website and I want to read a story about what someone did with the money. Hey, I went to a baseball game and I spent $5 because I wanted to donate it to charity and I wanted to say, hey, what the hey? And next thing you know, I won $23,000. What did you do with that? Did you start a business with it? Did you pay off student loans? Did you go on an amazing vacation? Who can do this story for us? Is this a buy hey story? We got to give this to Sam McDowell. Hey, Sam, take a break from the stadium. They ain't building the stadium no time soon. And let's track down some people who have won the 50-50 raffle because I want to find out some more information.
Maybe those people don't want to be known. Because, like, people win the lottery all the time and they don't put their name in the paper. Maybe Joe Schmo out in section 314 yesterday, or someone who was sitting in 411 for October of 2015, won the 50-50 raffle, wants to keep it to themselves because they don't want everyone around them to know, oh, guess what? Generational wealth just came home. Maybe that story doesn't exist because they're keeping it close to the chest.
Okay, well, I'm not here to disrespect anybody's generation. Winning $26,000 at the baseball game is not generational wealth. You didn't just hit the mega Powerball. You didn't hit the mega Powerball.
Based on the way Royals fans talk, they can't go to games during graduation. You would think $26,000 changes their lives forever.
See, that's why, I don't know why you're doing that. That's hate. And I don't condone that on this show. I don't condone you saying that about Royals fans.
I mean, using the same text line. How can you go on non-dollar night to get these hot dogs? So clearly $26,000 changed everything. everything.
I didn't say that. That was a Rob Brenton opinion. Y'all on the text line going to be mad at me when I didn't have nothing to do with that. I simply just want to know what happened. And I'm not trying to run up in your house or nothing. I'm not trying to rob you or nothing. I just want to know. They've been doing the 50-50 raffle for as long as I can remember. I've never got a story. I've never got a follow-up story. I want to know what happens. What happens when you win the Sonic Slam inning and they hit a grand slam? What happened? I want to know. I just want a little bit of an update. I don't think that's asking a whole lot. I want a little bit of an update. That's what I would appreciate.
Wasn't Nick Wright a big 50-50 raffle guy, or was that Danny that used to go
both.
Get games?
They both. They would always split. You know my saying. I don't think that anyone has ever won the raffle. You know my saying. We all have been to the Royals game, right? Have you ever been at a Royals game when they announce who wins the 50-50 raffle and the place goes crazy? Like one person won. You've never heard that before. You've never been sitting at the game and Mike McCarthy makes the announcement. The person that wins the raffle is 7-8-1. And you've never heard one person just go, ah, just start screaming because they just won all of this money. You've never heard that before. How does none of us have that? We all know somebody who has been on the Kiss Cam. We all know somebody who has done the hot dog derby. We know somebody who has experienced all of the things that you could do out of Kauffman. Ain't nobody ever sat to the person that won the 50-50 raffle. That's not a little suspicious to anybody. Very suspicious to me. Incredibly suspicious. And we have no record, no recollection of somebody that's actually won before. We know people win the Sonic Slam inning. They say their name on the screen. Steve Stewart. Well, special shout out to Glenda Robinson from Olathe. She is our... They tell you, hey, I'm Glenda. I'm rooting for you. You ain't never heard that for the 50-50 raffle because it ain't real. Because no one's ever won. Someone said people from home can do the 50-50 raffles, not as people at the stadium. No, you're right. You're right. No, you're right. You would think that sometimes it would be the people in the stadium that win, just on occasion. You're telling me the person at home always wins? Okay. All right. I'm just telling you my own theory. I don't know. Do you guys know 913-586-7965? Do you know somebody who has won the 50-50 raffle? You don't got to tell me their name. Yes, my next door neighbor won it. He built a wing onto his house with the money that he won.
Someone on the text line right here. I have a good buddy who won it a couple of years ago. He cleared, I'm not going to say the number, and they took his family to Disneyland. Boom.
Okay. All right.
Now it's worth noting that person is clearly an employee of the Royals.
Yeah, I'm just asking. I just want a little something. Just does anyone know somebody that's won the? They've been doing the 50-50 raffle for a long time. They've been doing it for a decade now. No, none of us know somebody that cleaned up and won $12,000.
By the way, this is very random. I had no idea you could play the 50-50 raffle at home. Yeah. Did anyone know
that's
that but
new.
Me?
Okay. That's new. Yeah, that's new. They just started that. That didn't used to always be the case. Now they even do it a little bit different, where they don't just pay out at the end of every individual game. Now they pay off at the end of the homestand. So they let the money accumulate. So now if you win, you really can get paid. You want to know what I think the 50-50 raffle is? I think the 50-50 raffle is us paying for the stadium. That's what I think it is. That's what I think it is. I think you want to know how they came up with that money for the stadium? We've been paying for it this whole time. We just didn't know it. That's what the other 50 is. Yes, 50 goes to the charity, no question. I'm not saying they're doing that part right. I'm saying the 50 that's supposed to go to Rob is going towards building the left field wall for the new stadium. That's what I think. I think something nefarious is going on, and I need to be proven otherwise.
You think that $1 billion the city just found and offered the Royals was 50-50 raffle money?
Someone on the text line, I've won the 50-50 raffle. I have photos of the ticket and matching numbers on the screen. All right, Rob, call this person, and you can even record. You can even go in the other room and record it. I want to hear the story then. I want to hear the story then. He doesn't have to come on the air, doesn't have to tell us his name. This person right here says that he has won the 50-50 raffle. We got Vern coming up. You go off mic and record with this person, and let's hear if we can actually hear the story of what happens when you win the raffle. You know what? I'm starting to think this raffle is like Will Chamberlain scored 100. You tell me Will Chamberlain scored 100. I just ain't never seen any proof that Will Chamberlain scored 100 points. I don't believe that it's real. Josh Vern, you're coming up next. Keep it right here. So drive.